Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the offense against the Packers in that third preseason game. And we're also going to have our roster predictions. Joining me for that is Frazier Tafar. Frazier, how you doing?
Doing good, Ken. Glad to be back for part two and finish up the rest of this offensive analysis and dive into the predictions for the roster.
I do have a possible colonoscopy coming up, which is about the only thing I'd less rather do than talk about the offense from this game. but we have to do it a little bit. And I think we have to start by talking a little bit about the offensive line play in this game. We scored three players individually in this game. I do want to talk about their play. And let me start by saying we did not do anything for either Voorhees or Fa'alele. I know there's a lot of interest, but each of them only played 14 snaps. So I don't think you can draw conclusions from small sample sizes. We're already riding the cutting edge of small sample sizes with Jones at 24 snaps and Rosengarten also at 24 and Ben Cleveland at 29. Those are already, you know, less than half of a typical NFL game we're talking about here. And you know, you're reporting a box score for a 5-inning game is essentially what we're doing.
Yep.
All right. So I'll start it off here. We'll talk about Josh Jones a little bit and the game he had. A lot of people would probably be blaming him for the strip sack that occurred. Looked to me like that was a read option play. They did not, Leary did not only not read it right or didn't process it, should have probably handed the ball off to Kelly on the play or run it himself. He has either are legitimate options for what he believes that end Mosby was doing in that case, but Mosby was unblocked. They knew he was going to be unblocked. They didn't make either a handoff or a takeaway using that. And then he turned and tried to throw the ball and release it quickly right, and he was nowhere near in time. The ball got stripped and taken in for the score that effectively put the game away. It was 20-7 after that score, and the Ravens had some backup quarterback play and some bad offensive line play to look forward to the rest of the game.
Yep, terrible C for Leary, but in terms of Jones, I think like you're saying, if it was a read option play, obviously his assignment is not to block the end because it's the read guy. Mm-hmm. But if it was not that and maybe a RPO, I don't know. It's just hard to see that. It was really a tough play.
It did. There was a moment where Jones kind of looked like, oh, crap, right on the play, which it almost leads you to believe it might have been a mistake. But on the other hand, they go all the way into the mesh and they pull the ball out. And usually, by the way, they stopped doing that with Lamar very early in his career. So 2019, they brought a lot of those concepts into the season when Lamar had MVP season. In the very first game, they did two all the way into the mesh, pull it out RPO plays. One of them was, an 83-yard touchdown to Brown.
Hollywood, yep.
So, they had success doing it. And they had another 20-yard completion in that game. I think they had one more play that might have gone incomplete later in the season. But they stopped doing it. I think the reason they stopped doing it was because it was taking too long.
Offensive linemen downfield as well.
Oh, and that would be another reason, yes. But just the fact that the quarterback, it takes too long for him to go through that set of motions is also very difficult. Anyway, get to the rest of Jones's scoring here. Played 24 plays, had 15 blocks. The real big problem for him was 7 missed blocks. Moved to level 2, couldn't find a block. Looked lost in doing so a number of times. He actually only 2 of those 7 missed blocks were losses at the line of scrimmage, which is actually good. But he's got to have more decisiveness, more processing speed to make blocks in level 2. So that was a big problem. 1.5 pressures allowed. So he wasn't clean in that regard either. 12 points, that worked out to 0.50 per play. So it still works out to an F, even without that sack that a lot of people, I'm sure, would try and charge him with. But, you know, if I were doing an arbitration and I'm trying to ascribe a fair value percentage of that sack, it would be something like a quarter or a third or maybe 20%. It'd be in that range that would have been his fault, that he could have prevented it somehow, that Samak was blocking out and got the defensive tackle that he was down blocking on, that he had something he could do, that he might have been responsible for knowing that Mosby could have dropped a coverage, say, and then he had to react differently if he didn't. I could ascribe some relatively small percentage of that sack to him, but it wouldn't be the whole sack anyway. So either way, Jones didn't have a good game this game, and that sack was not really the deciding factor.
Yeah, sad to see him take a step back this week. He played pretty good relatively the whole preseason, especially that first game. I mean, like, all pro out there, but this game he did take a step back, and not encouraging to see going into the year, and maybe we're getting a flash of why Arizona moved on from him.
Arizona's not the only team, right? But Arizona moved on after 3 years, you know, from a fairly high draft pick, and he was on the street for a reason, and the Ravens got him cheap for a reason. If it works out, he's a great Band-Aid, but he's also not a long term solution. Like Ronnie Stanley, he's only signed for 2024, so they're going to have to pay market value for him again at the end of this year, whatever that is, whether that's the vet minimum, whether it's, you know, 3 to 5 million, or whether it's a big long-term deal where I'm sure he'll be moving on if that's the case. All right, let's move over to Ben Cleveland, because I think he's the one a lot of people want to hear about. Cleveland, I thought, played pretty well in this game. He wasn't perfect, but more than not, he was betrayed by some bad play by other players, and I'll get to that in a moment. 29 plays, 25 blocks. He missed 3, allowed 1 pressure as I scored it, 23 points, 0.79 per play. That's a B- after adjustment at guard. I think that's a pretty clear reflection of what he did. He actually had 3 highlights in the game, and it was not, they were not nothing highlights. He had I'll go through this again because I put it in the article, and I wanted to make sure that it was out there. But he had his 3 highlights were a combination block, which that's a common interior offensive line highlight to have. You block somebody to set up your line mate at level 1, then you move to level 2 and you make a good block. That's a highlight pretty much automatically in my book, as long as it's done well at both levels. Then he had a textbook stunt handoff, and that's hard to do, because matching depth is hard, but Cleveland is strong enough and has some decent push that he can push a guy off. Doesn't have to be entirely laterally, or he doesn't have to be half beaten to the inside to push him off. He pushed him off, you know, well done, at the same level, such he could also both give and receive on the play. So that was good. And then he had his third one was a setup and help block. So what he did is he down blocked guard bubble. He down blocked to set up the center, and then he moved out to help the left tackle, in this case Jones, with a help block. So a good set of highlight blocks for Ben Cleveland in that game, and obviously that's one of the nice things. So B- for Cleveland. 2 pancakes during the game, that was nice. He made 1 of his 2 pulls. Oh, that's another one. His 1 pull he missed was a story unto itself. So it's 4th and 1.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the play first?
No, you got it. No, you probably
just got it better. So it was 4th and 1. Leary is under center. Now, because it was a pull play, one thing you can tell for sure is it's not a standard quarterback sneak where the quarterback is trying to go over center slash right guard, and mm-hmm. left guard is vacating, you know. So it had to be a running play that was going to a running back or a boot by the quarterback out to the left side, which would have been naked and dangerous, but yep. it would have been, you know, something to try with Leary potentially. But here's what happened. So the snap comes in, it's bobbled by Leary. I did not get a good sense whether the snap was screwed up or whatever, but it's probably hand placement by Leary is almost always the issue with fumbled snaps, is his hands weren't in the right place, or he pulled out too soon, or any of the things that go along with bad snaps. It's not generally the center's fault. The center knows how to snap a ball directly to a certain point between his legs. The time the center messes it up is in a shotgun snap.
Yep.
Okay. So Leary bobbles the ball. All of a sudden, Cleveland runs into him. Well, Cleveland is just going by the normal dance steps of that play.
Exactly.
There's really nothing he could do. And yeah, you play guard yourself. You know, I mean, you've got to follow through on that. Hope that quarterback gets the ball out of his hand in that period of time. Then the two are collided there. Then Leary tries to push forward out of that and doesn't make it. And the Ravens turn the ball over on downs. But that wasn't Ben Cleveland at all. That's Leary screwing up the exchange. And not being in a position to probably hand that ball off would have been my guess as to where that was going.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because it looked like it was going to be a power play up the middle. And it would have been interesting to see if Ben Cleveland would have connected on his block, because his dance steps to that point looked good on the pull step. But obviously not getting the handoff and looking stupid didn't help out. But overall, I think Cleveland had a good game. If he's able to write the same with his left hand the same way he is with his right hand, I think we'll be in a good situation for the coming weeks in the season, especially if we bring the rotation in at the right guard position.
Well, they said that Harbaugh said today that they wouldn't rule out rotation. I think he's really talking about right tackle.
Okay.
But I have a very hard time believing that they're going to do it at either guard spot, but maybe. And maybe it's the kind of thing that's like, yeah, we intended to do rotation all along in week three when they've had two bad games out of one of the two guards.
Right, 100%.
Yeah, so they've got ways to say that. It's better to say nothing or be vague than lay out all your plans at once. And I think at least the idea that Harbaugh has that he can hold his cards close to his vest might actually help in that particular situation. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Rosengarten on the right side. So I have scoring for him too. It wasn't great for him. 24 plays, 18 blocks, 4 missed. One penetration, so he's beaten to the inside, crossed his face on a zone blocking play left that ended up being a takedown for a loss. He had half a pressure that was shared with Jones on a play. And 15 points, 0.63 per play. It's just a small adjustment for the preseason because the players you're facing aren't as good. And that's a D before or after adjustment. He was a substantial distance there from getting a C, so it really wouldn't have it had been a D before or after, no matter what. He did have one block in level two, made one pancake, and made his only pull successfully. Rosengarten still looks like he has some anchoring issues to me.
Yeah, and especially his pass pro mirroring is amazing. His footwork looks really good. Once he gets that anchor to where it needs to be, because I think to say he can't anchor is a very strong statement. He's not anchoring well is what we're doing right now.
It's many phases of gray in there. Yep. So but nobody is a one or a zero on that scale, that's for sure. And it was not a strength of his in college, in that national championship game anyway, which I keep referring to, but it also he hasn't shown a great anchor so far in this preseason either.
Yep. And, in terms of his overall play this game, I think it sucks. He has a running mate like Falele with him, 'cause there's a couple of plays that I know Falele single-handedly got him washed. And it didn't help him out in terms of him effectively getting his block done. And I would have loved to see Rosengarten next to a guy like Kevin Zeitler, an all-pro, being able to not have to worry about chaotic play on next to him and him just worrying about being on an island, executing his job. I don't doubt that he's doing that now, but having an all-pro next to you is definitely a calming effect.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage, and it really can't be understated. But if I think back to Orlando Brown's rookie year, 2018, he's playing with Marshall Yanda on his left. Yep. And first of all, he had to wait half a season to get in there. And James Hurst was in at right tackle. So maybe I talk about Hurst first, because Hurst was really more the beneficiary of this. Hurst was having a lot of trouble anchoring. And a lot of Hurst's anchor problems don't come from a lack of experience. They don't come from him not knowing where he needs to place his hands. They came from being really short-armed at right tackle.
Yeah.
He didn't have a great mirror either, not a top-end mirror like a left tackle, and certainly not a top-end mirror like Rosengarten has. So he was constantly playing the game of losing some ground. But what he could count on is that when there was a guard bubble on that side, that Yanda would come over and look for the help block. And Yanda was pretty darn quick about getting there, processing through, you know, is there a stunt? Is there a blitz? You know, do I have a handoff coming on this side of the line? Okay, help block. Obviously much quicker than I can say it, but Yanda would get over there, and he really had a half a season of fantastic help blocks for James Hurst that kept his grading actually that year at a pretty decent level at right tackle. But anyway, I if Rosengarten could get that, his mirror and ability to die slowly is very good.
Yes.
And so if he has a right guard who can, you know, complement him with a number of these help blocks, that would go a long way towards minimizing the negative impact of his anchor.
Yeah. And I don't think the tight end chip is exactly what Rosengarten's looking like. He needs the inside help. He doesn't need the outside help, because I think he's able to push past the cone effectively with his agility and his speed. It's just the inside bull rush right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the Ravens have certainly had some great 12-6 blockers in their history, and typically guys with length are very good at that. Rosengarten has adequate length, not special for tackle, but he's certainly a guy who depends most on his feet to pass block, and is a generally lean lineman who's built very vertically, and those kind of guys, and we're seeing it with Voorhees too, have some problems anchoring. It's a normal consequence of being a lean, non-pear-shaped offensive lineman.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's all I have for scoring for the three guys. So we can move on. And what do we have next on the agenda here?
MVPs, I think.
MVPs. Let's talk MVPs. We don't need to talk about running back or quarterback. I think we hit on those enough in the first part of the show.
Yes.
So who are your three MVPs for the season? Go 3-2-1, and I guess we'll go 3-3-2-2-1-1. Like everybody's really waiting dramatically to hear who our three MVPs were from this last preseason game where the Ravens woke up with lots of brown and yellow on the sheets.
Yep. I think my third spot would be Dayton Wade. I think he showed a spark for the team, especially at the receiver position, showing that we have another option at returner gadget other than Hardy. I think he gave us developmental opportunity at that position. And then also he's from South Florida, Lamar Jackson, Zay Flowers, all that connection is still built in there. So it's a great for the team and also the locker room as well. So he would be my third MVP.
Yeah, that is a really nice component of that. And Wade has had a great preseason. This game, he dropped the ball going out of bounds, and he nearly caught a ball that was twice tipped by the Packers in Leary-esque fashion. But that was turned off on the replay assistant. It got the call right, unfortunately, and that was reversed. But he's had a great preseason. He's been the Ravens' best receiver. Other than maybe Wallace. Wallace has only had a couple of grabs, but yes, they've been really special. Wade has had, a long touchdown, but he's also had a lot of gadgetry that has looked like he would fit the Ravens offense pretty well. My number three guy is John Kelly. I think he had to do a ton of running on his own in this game. I thought he did an extreme yeoman-like job. Chris Collier also did some of it at the end of the game. Thankless last five consecutive runs were all run middles. Amazingly, Collier got a first down in the middle of that. I think Johnson just ran. Sorry, not Johnson. Kelly just ran a little harder and looked a little better during this game. And really appreciate those two guys being able to get the game over with. The Ravens needed to run the football. They needed some, you know, some short passes that are complete and advanced for minimal yardage or whatever yardage they can get. And they got that from Kelly and from Collier. And that's frankly, at this, in a game like this, that's all we're praising, is that they were able to get the game over.
Yep. Kudos for them to stay healthy too in that environment as well. Mm-hmm. I know it's not safe to be having grown men come at you full speed with no impede at all.
Yeah. All right. Number two for you.
Two, I have Josh Johnson. I think he came in and solidified once again that he is the backup quarterback for this team. Efficient with the time given, especially on that touchdown pass to Tylan Wallace. It was a thing of beauty to see the time in the pocket and him able to manipulate the middle coverage with the sit route and have Tylan go over the middle and just put it in a good place in between two levels. So I think that's my reasoning for Josh Johnson being number two.
Okay. Good. It's exactly my choice too. And I'll just make two quick comments about Johnson. First of all, this game, he did not leave a clean pocket in the way he has in each of the previous two games, three total times in each of the two previous two games. So that was good. The other thing is he made good on his ATS opportunity. So had a 9-yard play, a 5-yard play, and a 48-yard play. That's fantastic. 62 yards on three plays. Obviously, you'll take 20 yards of play on almost any way you want to subdefine a passing stat sheet. But in this case, I'd say an average might be 8+ yards per ATS is what I would be looking for. And they haven't got that at all from Leary. In fact, in this game, I'll just give you Leary's ATS opportunities because they were not none. He had a 5-yard pass, an incomplete, an 8-yard pass, and an incomplete. So he had, 13 yards on
five,
yeah. So that's less than impressive. So even you know, his successful pass plays there, and I think the 8-yard pass play was in that group, it was 2+6. You know, he threw the ball 2 yards from the line of scrimmage, and I forget even who advanced it 6 yards because it's someone who had one catch for 8 yards. Yeah, it's just it was there's no reason for us to bang on Devin Leary anymore. He's probably gone at this point.
We'll just talk about him at length at this point.
Your number one guy, I'm guessing it's ours too. It's mine.
Yeah, Tylan Wallace, big catch over the middle, great play. Showed the speed that we saw on that punt return last year and translated it to offense. And like we talked about the last show, I think his outlook on the year is great. I still have him at 55 over under for targets this year.
55 now, you said?
55.
Yep. Okay. And I have it at 22, but I've always been known to be more reasonable in such overs. I'll tell you what, you know, this happened at work and it does not give me a good reputation. I'll cut out the business talk every once in a while, I promise. But this is one of these things. If you work for a sales organization, I work for an insurance company, so I'm the product actuary, and we would always get into these questions about how much business could you sell when the marketers are saying, you know, we can make up in volume or you know, this is going to be a big deal for our field, it's going to create incremental demand, blah, 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 blah. It's all a bunch of crap, obviously. You know, you can tell by blah, 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 blah. But anyway, the thing that would come up is we'd have these contests for guessing how much new production the field would have over a certain period. And I know all the guesses are going to be high. I'm a natural gambler and I'm an advantage player, you know, just as a normal human being, that's my bent. And so I would always have the lowest number of any predicted sequence. And that did not earn me credits with the rest of the people there. The few dollars I won doing that was not worth it in terms.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So Head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Of my career, I can tell you that. So this is a kind of a House of the Rising Sun moment. Don't do the things I've done, you know, kind of thing. All right. Let's talk about our roster prediction now, because that's what everybody logged onto the show for here. And let's start at the quarterback position. How many quarterbacks do the Ravens keep, and who do you have?
Yeah, I think this one's pretty straightforward. We have Jackson and Johnson. I think no reason to keep a third. No one really – Emory Jones or Devin Leary didn't – make us bring a third quarterback on the team. And then also, I think Harbaugh talked about at the podium today, they aren't allowed to keep an emergency third quarterback. So
on the practice squad.
Right. So I think this makes it definitely not able for us to keep two. Go ahead.
Okay. So let me be real clear on that rule, because it actually forces you towards three. And that's what the union apparently wanted to do by rejecting the owner's proposal. So the owners proposed that the since they wanted to always have a third quarterback and always have a quality game, that they could be able to have an infinite number of practice squad elevations in game for a quarterback. And so they would not have to have a third quarterback on the roster. They could just have one on the practice squad and use him during that game. Okay. And they would not have to use one of their two elevations on him, and they would be able to just use him during the game. And the union rejected that because they thought it was bad to deny a spot for quarterbacks. If you're the union, you should be, by the way, agnostic to who gets your total percentage of the cap. If you're not, you're not treating all your members fairly. So basically the last two things they've done that have impacted, well, I don't know. One of the last things they did was to advocate for Lamar Jackson to get a big contract and a guaranteed contract. And that doesn't do anything except push money towards quarterbacks and take it away from other union members, which yep. I would be very upset of if I'm one of the 1,632 guys who, or however many it is, who is not a quarterback and is getting hosed by my union in that way. And I would vote with that in mind, in terms of proposals, in terms of leadership, whatever it might be, to make sure that didn't happen. So anyway, they did another thing. The union did another thing to basically say that the owners weren't going to take a shortcut to not pay a third quarterback here. They said no to it. And that means that you have to carry a third quarterback in order to have an emergency quarterback in the game. And in order to make use of that emergency, that free third quarterback activation. So you don't have to technically carry them on the roster, but you get to activate them. Sorry, you have to carry them on the roster. You don't have to carry them on the active game day roster. You can just bring them into the game as soon as your first two quarterbacks are hurt, and then those guys cannot return.
Okay, makes sense. Okay.
So anyway, I don't think it means the Ravens are going to kick three, by the way. I'm still predicting two. So that's what I'm going with, and I think the Ravens, for tomorrow anyway, this is all of this, by the way, is my roster guess for tomorrow for the Ravens. It's not for who they're going to carry on opening day, which I do have notes on as we go through this. But I think if they have another quarterback, that's going to be the third guy. It'll be from outside the organization. I don't think it'll be either Jones or Leary. And I think one of them will probably go to the practice squad. The other will be cut.
Yeah. And we've talked about that last show. I don't know if it's going to be Emory Jones or Leary. I think it's a coin flip at this point, really.
Okay. All right, very good. So let's move on to running back and tell us who you have.
Obviously, I have Henry Hill to begin, and then this is where it gets kind of shaky for me. I think if Wright's injury does become Liz Frank-esque, he's going to be out for the year, so that would eliminate him being on my list. And at the podium, Harbaugh did use inclusive language when talking about Ali, like they already have him in the plans moving forward. So I don't know if that's any indication that they see him making the team over Owen Wright and Owen Wright going to IR. So in my initial, before the preseason game where he got hurt, I had Henry, Hill, and Wright. But for right now, I'm just at Henry and Hill.
Okay. All right. Well, that frees up an extra roster spot, which can be used elsewhere. So there's two ways this could actually play out. And it actually makes the roster contest a difficult thing to adjudicate, because they have four spots. They have two spots that are free spots for IR that they'll take, but they'll also take two where they move them onto the roster and then they move them to IR. Well, it actually matters for people in a roster contest whether Wright makes it to the team and then is moved to IR, or whether he uses one of these two spots at the start of the year. So it's a different thing, but I would basically agree with you. I think Wright is one of those two. He will either be moved to IR after the rosters are set on Tuesday, or he will be put in one of those two spots. I think it's easier to play this if he is, well, it's probably easier just to put him on the roster and just say he's taking one of those three spots. But the other thing would be if you say he's not there, who else joins the team? And I think I'll get to later who I think would join the team if Wright is a guy that is, as you say, not one of the two and is just put on one of those IR spots right away, or even IR'd for the entire year. Right,
yeah. And that's what I'm thinking if this injury is as serious as it seemed to be.
By the way, Ali is in a similar spot where he might, even though he's probably in better shape, he's been out with a stinger / concussion since that first game, and he might be a guy they just want to put on the shelf for four games at this point. They've got other. I mean, it's the third running back. Your top two running backs are healthy. Your third running back only gets about two carries a game and plays some special teams. Collier could probably do that, and Kelly could probably do it too.
Or we could allocate that to a defensive back.
Yeah, or find another guy on the street. All possibilities.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So anyway, I think we're in the same similar place on that. I technically included Wright on my roster here, and you technically did not, right? So you've got one additional slot to fill the rest of the way.
Yes.
And we're only doing the offense tonight, by the way. We're not doing the defense. So just want to make that clear for the listeners out there. I know if you want to hear my call on the defense, it's out there from yesterday. And I did have Pepe Williams being cut, so I'm right at least on that so far. So, that was the only cut that was of any consequence today. Okay, or of any surprise today. Okay, so the tight end position. I'm keeping four guys. You have four there as well?
Yep. Andrews, likely Kohler, Ricard.
Okay, absolutely. No surprises. Ishmael to the practice squad would be my call. You in the same spot on that?
Yep.
Okay. All right, let's move on. I think we've talked enough about those players to know that that's the case. Wide receiver, I have six right now, and I could see it being seven, but give me who you have on the roster.
Right now, I have no particular order. I have Bateman, Flowers, Aguilar, and then I go Walker, Wallace, and then Wade
now. So you have six guys. You're cutting Hardy if you do that. Okay, and so you're basically saying you got a first year player, and you want to invest something in his development. By the way, I really understand what I think you're trying to do here, because Hardy has guaranteed money in his contract, but he is making the vet minimum, or we're close to it. What is Hardy actually making? I think he's making the vet minimum, but he has like $750,000 or something in guaranteed money.
Yep, around that.
And so if that's the case, you probably live with that. He's got actually $985,000 in guaranteed money. So
cutting those losses seem to be the best thing right now. I don't think Hardy has been that much of an impact. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess my point would be that you're paying additional money for the rights to Hardy for a longer term, which I can completely buy into that. I also think the Ravens have some shortage at the receiver position, and a guy like Wade could really help them. A guy like Hardy, I'm not as sure. He hasn't gotten any play this preseason, obviously, but I'm not as sure he can bring to the table what Wade has. I would say Hardy has made a few big plays in camp, and I would say Wade has been involved in more. So it's not just the preseason I'm talking about. It's really what the guys did in camp where the conditions are fairly similar and equal. And, you know, Hardy's getting a chance to play some snaps with Lamar, and Wade really is not. So pluses and minuses to that. One other player on this list that I think is, and we've got the same guys otherwise with Bateman, Flowers, Aguilar, Walker, and Wallace. But Walker is a guy who might start the season on IR.
Yep. Okay. I think that's very true. I think he could go on short term, and that opens up a lane for Kirkwood. And that frees it up for him. To be transparent with you, I have Kirkwood the first one in, first one out before Hardy. So
Kirkwood the first one in, first one out.
In the bottom half of the roster.
Okay. So you're saying he's your number seven receiver, really? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. But you, that means Wade is your number six receiver.
Yes.
Okay. And I have it as Walker making the team to start the season. One point was made to me, and I think I really agree with this, is that the developmental play for Walker practicing for the initial part of the season is awfully important. And he's obviously had some injuries and whatnot, but they also have a significant list of inactive players. They have to line up every week. You know, it's five guys basically they have to declare as inactive, and it can be up to seven because they've got practice squad elevations that can further increase the number of 53 men guys that they deactivate for the week. So it seems to me that you won't have any problem with the roster spot until the injuries start to pile up, with somebody like Walker sitting as inert material on your roster, meaning he's there, he's getting to practice, not completely healthy, but he's not getting to play. And until you get five or six injuries, that's not a problem. Unfortunately, last year that happened the first week of the season. they filled up all of their injured players still in the active roster, and the second week they picked up some more, and it can get bad very quickly. So we just have to know that it's a problem that might need to be addressed.
Yep. And I hope it doesn't get to that point, and we're not losing our top two guys. I think if we lose Aguilar, we're still in a good spot. But if we lose Bateman and Flowers, I think that's when we're going back to Andrews likely.
Yeah, it could see a lot of 12 under those circumstances, or a lot of even 13.
Yeah,
to make up for that. I would completely agree with that, and I think that those two guys are two of the most important players, and Bateman still need to see him get on the same page with Lamar. Basically, which a lot of that, honestly, I'd love to be able to say it's Bateman because it would somehow focus the attention to fixing it. But I think a lot of it's actually Lamar. I think him not being an on schedule quarterback means that a lot of Bateman's value is taken away on where he gets his separation by wiggling at the top of the stem. I think he loses a lot of that when Lamar doesn't immediately look for that pass to be open and throw it before he gets open.
Right.
Those two really need to figure it out together. And the onus is on Bateman because it's his career. Frankly, it's on the line. Lamar Jackson, he will ride this style of play to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And there's no one is going to stop him. But Bateman, if he doesn't figure it out with Lamar, his career may be over in 3 years. So
yeah.
It's going to be a tough road. So whatever it takes in terms of time in South Florida, Bateman get another apartment there, whatever it might be, is probably a good plan for him.
All right.
So we're set at wide receiver. We got a little bit of difference there, but the player I have is Wade for Wright would be the big change that could be made tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. Out there Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. would be that Wright goes to one of the two IR spots, so he's not actually carried on the roster. It allows them to carry Wade, which means they don't have to expose him to waivers. And he's based on the preseason he's had, I don't think the chance is probably any more than 50% that he would be claimed off waivers, but I think there is a legitimate chance that he'd be claimed off waivers if he's caught here.
Yep. And then on my list, same scenario for you, but just taking out Hardy and putting in Kirkwood. And if Wright does end up going on IR, then we're putting in Kirkwood for the back half. And then if he's not on IR and is part of the 53, then we're going just Wade.
Okay. And I'm fine with Kirkwood being on the practice squad, but I don't see any ways on the 53 tomorrow. So I'll be right there. So now we get to the offensive line. So how many spots did you have left for the offensive line? Assuming you went 25 offense and in this prediction.
2, 4. Wow. I think I have 4 left, 4 spots after.
I think you should have 10 offensive linemen because you had 2 quarterbacks, 2 running backs. That's 4 tight ends. Right. That's 8, 7 wide receivers. That's 15. So you have room for 10 offensive linemen.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. I don't know.
All right. And that's actually what I had too, was 10 offensive linemen.
Got it.
So who are your 10?
Going from left to right, I have Stanley, Voorhees, Linderbaum, Falele, and Rosengarten. And mm-hmm. then first line of defense, we have McCary, Cleveland, Jones, Samak, and then I had Manning, but obviously that didn't work out with the cut. So,
a couple guys to choose from there.
Yeah, I guess. Sorry, Ken.
That's okay. Take your time. I'll go through mine quickly and just some comments I have about all of them. So Stanley, Linderbaum, Voorhees, Falele, McCary, Rosengarten, Cleveland, Jones, and as of today, Stamac is reported to have only a sprained ankle and was back at practice. I think that clears up some of the roster thing. I thought there was a chance that both of Dalcourt and Bullock might make the team because they can each back up at center. They can each play guard, and it might make a lot of sense to have additional reinforcements at the interior offensive line when you're not that confident about your interior offensive line also. And then there's also the risk, of course, that Linderbaum might not start the season. And Linderbaum at least practiced on some level today. I don't know whether he was limited or whether he was full, but you mentioned that earlier. So anyway, the guy I chose, I had to choose one of Dalcourt or Bullock to go as the 10th offensive lineman. I had Samak as my 9th. And I chose Dalcourt because I think he's been ahead of Bullock for most of the preseason and most of camp in terms of the time he's at center. He's been at center a lot. They've had, frankly, a lot of guys play center. They had Voorhees take snap there, Cleveland snaps there, McCary, a whole bunch of different people other than Linderbaum have had snaps. But Dalcourt has really been the second string guy, even when Linderbaum was healthy, and Samak was apparently dealing with some minor injury, was behind him at that point. So I think Dalcourt is a guy they like because he's big. He can play guard and center. And I think I've repeated this a number of times, but I don't think it's easy to carry a third center on a team, even though I've done it in this particular case. Second center. It's kind of like carrying a third catcher in baseball, that it's too much of a roster, too much inert matter on your roster to live with. But the Ravens are you know, fairly confident in their top offensive players here, and I think they're otherwise in pretty good shape, and they could also move Samak to IR as soon as he's on the roster. So they could trim themselves immediately to 9 offensive linemen, wouldn't have a problem with that, and return, say, a Wade to the roster or a running back they pick up.
Yeah, and it was almost ironic how the Ravens carried Mustafa last year onto the roster, and then Linderbaum gets hurt the first game. And then it was like, oh my God, they're just geniuses for having a center available on the roster for active game day. So I think having Samak is definitely great. And then I know I was struggling to find 10th, but I think our 10th offensive lineman is not in the building right now. I think that position is reserved for someone to bring in externally. But for the sake of finishing the listing, I think Dalcourt would just be the in-house name that we put in for the 53 right now.
Okay, very good. So, and I wouldn't disagree with that, by the way. We're specifically talking about tomorrow at 4 p.m. And to the degree there's a trade before 4 p.m., we can't really predict that. So yeah. I'm not going to...
Nor do we know who it would be.
Yeah. Right. That's the thing. We wouldn't be able to predict that there was a trade, and we certainly wouldn't be able to predict who it was. The Ravens do have the possibility to trade from a position of strength here. They have a lot of talent at cornerback right now, and they could actually trade a corner, I think, by 4 p.m. rather than cut one. And guys that are potential trade candidates, it's usually guys who are only around for 1 year, signed to a fairly minimal deal or on a rookie contract. But Mullen, who's hurt, is probably no longer has trade value, but I think he'll be cut. Kadar Holman might be a guy that some team wants that has maybe a couple injuries in the preseason at corner. I think he could help some team. Ryan Cooper, I hope nobody comes sniffing around the list, but if they're not going to keep Cooper, they better trade him, because you better get something for a player who has real talent like that. And I think the chance of Cooper slipping through waivers is not as high as I would like it to be. So I hope if they get inquiries about him, particularly from a team that's kind of at the top of the league last year, which means they're very low in the claim order, yep, that they consider very seriously what they need to acquire in exchange for Cooper if they're not in fact going to keep him. And I honestly think he's earned the spot on the roster right now relative to the other guys. So I want him on the roster.
Fair enough.
Okay. Outstanding. Always fun to talk football with you, Frazier. How about telling folks where they can talk football with you?
You guys can reach me at Twitter/X at F_Rave8. That's F_Rave8.
All right. Of course, Frazier and I will be continuing our matchup show every week, giving you a couple of key matchups to look at on each side of the ball. Show we had a lot of fun with last year. I'm looking forward to continuing it. And that will typically come out on Saturday before a Sunday game. So we'll hopefully have some up-to-date information, show you can listen to on Saturday over the weekend while you're mowing the lawn or doing whatever people do on Thursday in October. I don't actually have a lawn, but but if you did, then you could mow that. Rake leaves, maybe that's the better one for the fall, right? So it's it'll be available then, also be available on your ride to the ballpark on Sunday if that's when you finally get to it. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. As always, if you can promote the show in any way, we really appreciate it. Drive traffic to it. Tell your friend who's interested in football that you haven't thought of talking about film study yet. Tell them this is a show you enjoy listening to. We really, really appreciate your loyalty. I know I speak for Frazier in this regard and all the other co-hosts on this show, just how much you folks mean to us in terms of that. And we don't probably say it enough, but you're a great audience, and I've come to really appreciate and value how much you bring to the table in terms of your own knowledge, and how that means I don't have to dummy down the show in any big way. So it's just great to have an opportunity to talk football with you folks. And please make use of the Film Study Mailbag as well. # Film Study Mailbag for future shows. Love to hear from you there as well. Frazier, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next week on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.